Kimberly Clark. Frank Wynn was supposed to, was scheduled to present, but he's unable to be here. Kimberly Clark is a senior regional planner at the Southern California Association of Governments, or SCAG, which we heard about a little earlier, so this is dovetailing very nicely. She specializes in the identification analysis of long-term demographic and land use patterns. Ms. Clark has led the bottom-up local input process for SCAG's 2016 Regional Transportation Plan and Sustainable Communities Strategy, which involved the development and refinement of the base socioeconomic and geographic data sets for the upcoming plan. She's also served as the technical lead for SCAG's Environmental Justice Program, including the State of the Practice EJ Appendix for the 2012-35 RTP SCS, I love acronyms, which features analysis that has been published in the Transportation Research Record and presented at the annual meeting of the Transportation Research Board and at the ESRI Worldwide User Conference. So she holds an undergraduate degree in political science as well as a master's degree in urban planning. So, Kimberly Clark.
Great. Thanks very much for this opportunity to present. My name is Kimberly Clark. I'm a senior regional planner at the Southern California Association of Governments. Fortunately, I have a little bit more time in my presentation to focus on content. I don't need to tell you so much about SCAG because of Solange's presentation. But just a little bit. So I'll go over our organization really briefly. I'll do an overview of our 2012-2035 RTP SCS. Also look at health and environmental justice results and social justice impacts. And let me say that I am in no way connected to any proprietary type of products resulting from this project. I'm not benefiting from this other than the gracious salary that my agency gives me. Okay, so what is SCAG? SCAG is the nation's largest metropolitan planning organization. We have 38,000 square miles. We're also the nation's global gateway for trade. We have 191 cities and 6 counties and 18.5 million people. If SCAG were its own nation, we would be the 16th largest economy in the world, right behind South Korea. So what is Regional Transportation Plan and Sustainable Community Strategy? Well, as Solange mentioned before, what's new in California is Senate Bill 375, SB 375. This is the first piece of legislation in the United States that unites long-range transportation planning with housing and land use planning at the regional level. So what this means is we're not only considering long-range transportation, we're also considering how the built environment affects the community in turn with the transportation investments and how kind of everything works together towards a more sustainable future. We also have greenhouse gas emissions goals that are set forth by SB 375 that we need to plan for and meet in accordance with the Air Resources Board of California and with the state legislation. So what are the demographic trends that we considered in the development of the plan? In 2008, our population was about 17.9 million. We anticipate that by 2035, we're going to add 4.2 million people to the SCAG region. One of the big changes we anticipate is our change in age cohorts. In 2010, 2% of our population was age 65 or over. Moving into the future, 3.8% of our population will be over 65. We'll also see an increase in our worker population, ages 21 to 64. So taking these certain trends into account, we do anticipate having more growth in multifamily housing in relation to single-family housing moving towards the future. This is also something that we see happening in the market. The real estate market in Southern California largely has been driven by single-family housing production for many years. The last time that multifamily housing production had a larger percentage of total building permits was in 1980. This is a trend that we've seen where there are actually more multifamily housing units being constructed in Southern California than single-family units since 2011, and it's carried through until 2013, and is foreseeable to carry through to the future. So we have certain demographic conditions, we have market conditions that are kind of supporting what we want to do in terms of increasing urbanization, increasing density around transit stops. So moving with the trends that are happening now, and also looking to the future in terms of sustainability, we have a number of smart growth strategies that we implemented, we're working to implement with the 2012 Regional Transportation Plan. First of those would be only 13% of capital investments are being devoted to highways. Everything else is being devoted to other non-motorized uses and other types of non-road investments. In fact, we're tripling our active transportation investment from our previous plan. We're also wanting to focus over 50% of our population growth and household growth within a 3% land area. That 3% land area would be our high-quality transit areas. Those are the areas that are well-served by transit. And in terms of growth, we anticipate that we'll move from a 7-to-3 ratio of single-family units to multifamily units to a 3-to-7 ratio for growth of multifamily units to single-family units. That means for every 10 units built moving into 2035, 3 will be single-family and 7 will be multifamily. So looking at where we want to concentrate the growth, on this map we see existing rail investments and also planned rail investments. These areas right here, our orange dots, are anticipated growth. So you can see how we're trying to concentrate our growth in areas that are well served by transit. So in 2008, 60% of our households were not within high-quality transit areas. About 40% were. Moving into 2035, we anticipate that over 50% will be located in high-quality transit areas, and 50% will be located in areas outside of HQTAs, high-quality transit areas. And we anticipate a growth of 700 households in these areas. So I've been talking a little bit about smart growth, and I've been talking a little bit about sustainability, but what does that actually look like on the ground? How are we trying to encourage active transportation and transit usage in the Southern California region? As Solange mentioned before, we're not an implementing agency. We don't build things. But what we do is provide grants for local agencies to envision building for the future. So this is a study in the city of Montclair looking at the North Montclair Metrolink area. This is how it looks now. This is how it looks in the future. This is what the city, working with SCAG and various other stakeholders, has envisioned for this area moving into the future. Next, this is the Expo Line Vermont Station. The Expo Line is the latest rail transit line in Los Angeles. And this is the vision for the future. As you can see, there's more people living in the area. We have higher density housing. I'll go back. We have higher density housing. We also have more walkable facilities, more transit-friendly facilities. This is also the Blue Line in Long Beach. Blue Line is one of our light rail lines. Goes north to south, connecting Long Beach to Los Angeles, to downtown Los Angeles. And you can see the increase of higher density housing targeting growth around our rail transit stops. Now, what does this mean for the population? Well, we've seen that transportation costs are higher in areas with fewer transit options. So by giving people more choices, transit costs and transportation costs actually go down as a percentage of household income. With transit usage going up, VMT, vehicle miles traveled, actually goes down. And when vehicle miles travels goes down, that means less cars on the road, which also means less CO2 emissions. So this is CO2 emissions per household from autos in Southern California, concentrating on Los Angeles County, Riverside County, and Orange County. And our black lines here are our rail transit. So I just want to go into a little bit about the health impacts that we anticipate from the 2012 plan. I'm going to go into a little bit of cancer risk information and also respiratory hazard information. I want to introduce this data by saying this is kind of building on a previous study for the Air Resources Board from Manuel Pastor, Rachel Morello Frosch, and Jim Sad. That data set actually was mentioned before by Solange. We looked at a number of factors for considering cancer risk. First would be our on-road vehicle emissions, also median income, in addition, some of our transportation facilities information. So how close you were in proximity to a highway, how close, how many highways happen to go through your census tract. So this data was developed at the census tract level, and we provided information in our 2012 environmental justice appendix on existing cancer risk and existing respiratory hazard. However, moving into our 2016 plan, What we're looking for and what we're looking towards is trying to model the impacts of our anticipated development in terms of health. So this is kind of what we're looking for in the future. And so the data is kind of still in development stages, but we wanted to show you what we have initially. So looking at cancer risk, this is our 2008 cancer risk. What you can see here is a high concentration in Los Angeles County, and this is cancer risk per million. So this is over the lifetime over the average lifetime, how many people within a million are going to get cancer, taking into account a number of factors, not just on-road vehicle emissions. So the regional average is actually 448. It's pretty high, one of the highest areas in the nation. Oops. So moving into the future, what we did was taking all of those factors, we did a regression analysis using ordinary least squares, OLS, and other exploratory regression and geographic weighted regression tools used in Esri's spatial statistics toolbox. So we took into account a number of on-road vehicle emissions factors, did a regression analysis, and this is what it turns out to be. So this is our baseline scenario. This is kind of a business as usual. This would be what development would be based upon our 2008 regional transportation plan, and takes into account the constrained projects in that plan. So this is kind of a way of comparing what we have in terms of smart growth strategies in the 2012 plan to what was anticipated in the 2008 plan. So you can see a reduction of 5% for our baseline conditions. And then moving into the future, we see a 6% as a result of the plan. Now, one of the things that we want to consider is not just cancer risk, but also what is the impacts of cancer risk on various population cohorts. As a metropolitan planning organization who receives federal funding, it's important for us, and it's important just in general, to understand the impacts of our plan on various racial and ethnic minority groups, and also low-income groups. The guiding legislation and executive orders established by the federal government would be Title VI, as well as a number of executive orders outlining environmental justice. So the goals are to avoid, minimize, and mitigate disproportionately high and adverse health human impacts, including social and economic effects, on minority populations and low-income populations. Those are the two important groups for environmental justice. Also important to environmental justice is to ensure the full and fair participation by all potentially affected communities in the transportation decision-making process, and to prevent the denial of reduction in or significant delay in the receipt of benefits by minority and low-income populations. I mentioned before just a little bit about the guiding documents. And now I'll go into some of the analysis in terms of health impacts. So what we see here is we have our base year. This is our percentage of Hispanic population in the region for 2008. What we want to see is comparing what is the percentage of the population in the region for the Hispanic group, and also compare that to our highest risk areas. So we have 45% of the population is Hispanic in the region. In our highest risk areas, there's actually 63% Hispanic population. So moving into the future, what we have in 2035 is more of a proportionate impact. We have 55% Hispanic population in the region, and in our highest risk areas, we have 59%. Let's see. So moving on to respiratory hazard. Respiratory hazard, important to note, anything over a 1 score is indicating risk. Any areas, which you see here, are our lowest risk, which have a score from either 0 to 1. So our average is 4.52 for the region. This is also one of the highest areas in the United States. With our baseline conditions, so business as usual, we see a 4% reduction. Moving into the plan, we see a 5% reduction. So looking at the environmental justice impacts of our respiratory hazard. Region-wide, we see the Hispanic population is at 45%. Whites are at 34%. In our highest risk areas, Hispanics are at 62%. So the important number to compare is 62 to 45. It looks like there's some disproportionate impacts here. Moving into the future, though, we see that population in our highest risk areas is much more proportionate with what we see in the region. So just a little bit more on health impacts in proximity to highways. Urban areas are frequently crisscrossed, and especially in Los Angeles, with heavily traveled corridors. Neighborhoods that are in close proximity to highways and freeways are especially at risk, as particulate pollution tends to concentrate near highly traveled roadways and drops off by about 70% outside of 500 feet. So the important thing to take into account is our 500 feet buffer. So we wanted to also look at cancer risk in terms of that 500 foot buffer. So in here you can kind of see the freeways, and you see that our highest risk areas are the areas that follow the freeways. So moving into the future, for our baseline condition, we see a 9% reduction. With smart growth strategies in the 2012 plan, we see a 10% reduction. Here's respiratory hazard. So this is higher than the region in our 500-foot buffers. There's a 7% reduction with our baseline and an 8% reduction with the plan. Also, something important to consider is the population within those 500-foot buffers. Are we seeing more minority population in those 500-foot buffers than we see in the region? In fact, yes, we are. There's an 81% population rate of minority population in our 500-foot buffer areas, compared with 76% in the region. So this is all non-white population. Also, our poverty, we see higher instance of poverty in our highway buffers than we do in the region. So this is something that we need to look into and do some further study to make sure that there's no disproportionate impacts moving into the future. We also looked at a number of factors in association with environmental justice for the plan. One of them is being who's paying for the plan and who's benefiting. So what we see here is share of retail and gasoline taxes paid versus share of transit investments or transportation investments. So we see that our share of investments outpaces retail and gasoline taxes for Hispanic and non-Hispanic African Americans. Our share of retail and gasoline taxes paid versus RTP investments or regional transportation plan investments by income. We see that share of investments outpaces retail and gasoline taxes for the lowest two income quintiles. So those are the ones we're concerned about. Those are our lowest income households. Also, share of transportation investments is based on future travel assumptions for each group. That's why you see a difference in share of retail and gasoline taxes paid for our highest earners versus the amount that they benefit from the plan. So this is person mile savings by income and travel time. Share of travel time and person mile savings are highest for the top two quintiles, and this is proportionate to the higher uses of autos. Now let's look at investments in job accessibility by ethnicity. So this is comparing our plan to the baseline again, and we see that across the board, accessibility to jobs by both auto and bus improves. Also, we see across the board improvements by income quintiles, both by auto and bus. Next, we looked at shopping accessibility. So how easily can people travel and take care of their shopping within 45 minutes, both for transit, for all transit, including rail, for buses specifically, and just by auto. So in comparing the baseline to the plan, we see also improvements across the board. Also, when you consider that same metric by ethnicity. So this is park accessibility. How easily can people get to parks within 45 minutes of travel? We see that it improves across the board by both auto and by bus travel. And some populations improve higher than others, but everything is kind of around that 25 to 35%. Also, park accessibility by income quintile. This ranges from about 25 to 35% as well. And now projected rail-related impacts. So just as we looked at who lives within those 500-foot buffers of highway corridors, we also want to look at who lives within 500-foot buffers of rail corridors. As I mentioned before, Southern California is a global gateway for trade. We're in the East Coast right now. New Orleans has a very large port, but I can guarantee you most of the products that come from Asia to this part right here came through either our port or the Port of Oakland. This is a big responsibility that our region has for serving the rest of the United States. So it's important that we take into account the emissions factors for the people who live in our region who are serving the rest of the nation, essentially. So we see within our 500-foot buffers, we have a higher instance of minority population than is seen in the region, and somewhat higher instance of poverty population than is seen in the region. So roadway noise, where are the areas that have some of the worst roadway noise? Similar to our other metrics, we also see a higher minority population here than is seen in the region, and also a higher poverty population than is seen in the region. Aviation noise, so where are the areas that are impacted because of our airports, because of aviation noise? More so than our other areas, we see a higher impact, a higher instance of minority population in our areas that are affected by aviation noise, and a higher instance of poverty in those same areas. So moving into the 2016 plan, we want to focus more on active transportation. We also want to look more at gentrification and affordable housing. Also continue our research with accessibility to parks and shopping. Also, we want to further our research in public health. I've showed you a little bit of what we have planned for the 2016 RTP SES, and we want to move in that direction to really consider public health-wise what are the impacts of our plan. Right now, we're working with various stakeholders to collect input on additional areas to study and to make sure that everyone is engaged in the process. Great. Thanks very much.